All right, well, we're here for the Cover 2 podcast. We're diving into unknown worlds. It is J-Mac, the realist, and our boy Tim Kelly joining us here with the College Football Encyclopedia. You know, today's a big day. Britney Spears had her baby today.
Wow.
And this is actually very sad news that Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown are getting divorced.
Had to start us out on a bummer, huh, Jonathan?
Trying to make things go smoothly. But I'm really disappointed because that means there's no season two of that Bobby Brown Bravo show.
That was a classic in the making.
Well, I like the one where they were randomly dancing in the jewelry store. Or I think it was a car dealer. It probably happened more than once. But all right. You can go back and watch it whenever. Well, we're going to try to talk college football and all sorts of fun things, and we're going to try to be laid back and hopefully do this once a week, but let's be honest, we're all kind of lazy, so that may not really happen. But we're going to first talk about the blog poll fiasco, the brouhaha between MGO Blog and Blue Gray Sky. I don't really have all the pertinent details on it, so I'll just be, you know, the guy being the side seat driver, but I believe the realist has a couple of background perspective on it.
It kind of struck me as odd. The Blue Gray Sky, they have a ton of readership, and it seemed like their ploy was to draw people's attention so that they could make a point about the worthlessness of preseason polls. But why couldn't they just make a post to declaring the worthlessness of preseason polls? I didn't understand their methodology, basically because it was irrational and nonsensical. But, you know, it was their right to submit a whack ballot, and Brian spiked it, you know. He pretty much said, this is stupid and it makes no sense, and if you're not going to at least take it seriously, while, you know, the goal is to have fun, but at least take it seriously enough to put some effort into it and some thought and some rationale, then, you know, it's not worth it to ruin everyone else's statistical norm.
Now, he spiked other ones, right? He did this Sunday morning quarterback. He spiked one of their polls in the preseason one, or the first week as well.
I'm not
right?
sure he spiked it as much as he required it to have some rationale. He required them to go back and actually post why he ranked the teams where he ranked them, and give the sort of methodology. Where this differs is the Blue Gray Sky had no methodology. They just kind of randomly ranked teams, you know, based on perceptions and what, you know, it just didn't really make any sense.
Well, they had, because he had Ohio State, the Blue Gray Sky had Ohio State number one in the preseason, and Tim, you'll thoroughly enjoy this as well. Had him number one in the preseason. They beat Northern Illinois 35-12, and then he drops them entirely from the poll going into the second week. Now, I mean, I'm not a huge Ohio State fan either, but, I mean, if you're number one, you're number one, and if you lose, you shouldn't be penalized for it. That doesn't make any sense to me. So, but then, like, he had numbers 11 through 25 were teams that had, like, one loss, and they hadn't performed, or they performed well against a BCS team. But that just kind of, because I think the rationale he wanted to use as well was that he wanted teams to perform well against BCS opponents. But I think you mentioned on his blog in a comment that, you know, does Rutgers then, are they a top five team? And he actually answered, yeah. He said he had him number three, which I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy and all, but I can't comprehend having Rutgers anywhere remotely near the top five of the college football polls.
Yeah. I have a general dislike and distrust of anyone from Ohio, but I still have Ohio State number one in my poll. You know, you can measure a team's quality and measure a team's even playing a lesser opponent as long as you actually know what went on in the game. You know, you can't just look at a score and say, oh, well, you know, Team A is far superior to Team B. But if you can look at the plays and see, you know, that Team A averaged 10 yards a play and then they called off the dogs after the first quarter like Ohio State did in week one, then you know they could have easily scored 100 points and they chose not to.
Well, and they showed that. They went out and they demolished Texas, since the game. I mean, they scored 24 points. They held Texas to 7. And, yeah, they don't have Vince Young, but they brought back you know, every skilled player under the sun that they had. So, I mean, I don't kind of comprehend that voting. I mean, I can see maybe he lowers them in the rankings. I still wouldn't ever think to do that. I think if you're number one until you get beaten or you just look absolutely horrible, you're going to be number one through the end. Because using what he did, he could randomly then say at the end of the season he could have another team, but then a 9-2 team, like let's say a 9-2 Cal team beats a 10-1 Michigan team, he would say, well, Cal's playing the best football right now, so even though we have a 12-0 Notre Dame team, I'm putting Cal as a national champion or my final poll. And that just doesn't make any sense using the kind of the methodology and the rationale he has.
Right. So I think there's also this bias towards the BCS conference teams, and I think it's a little bit unfounded and kind of odd coming from a Notre Dame guy who's not in a BCS conference that he's putting more credence in a win against a BCS conference team, even though Boise State proved that a BCS conference team isn't much of anything when they pounded Oregon State. Mm-hmm. Akron beat NC State, you know, in NC State.
Which was excellent, by the way.
And, you know, there's so much parity these days that the teams at the bottom of BCS conferences are struggling to beat the better non-BCS teams. So if a team schedules a team from the MAC and doesn't beat them by 30, mm-hmm. like Michigan and Central Michigan, it mm-hmm. doesn't mean that Michigan played inferior competition mm-hmm. to the point where you should drop them out of the poll for right. just for playing them.
Right. What's the over-under, by the way, on Chuck D'Amato eating a baby before the season's over with?
I'm giving him 3 weeks.
I'm just putting that out there. Tim, can you go along with it?
He can't hold out that long. He must eat babies.
he does. He is Chuck D'Amato. That's how they raise him from wherever Chuck D'Amato's from. Possibly Ohio.
Could be.
And it all comes full circle now. Well, we'll quit picking on other programs and states and Chuck D'Amato, at least for the time being. And we'll see if Tim has a random fact. He's looking at Miami. That's kind of disappointing. I was hoping for Michigan action.
Well, I was trying to find something about Akron since you brought them up. But I just thought it was funny that Miami's distinguished alumni list is pretty enjoyable. Sylvester Stallone, Gloria Estefan, Charles Grodin, Enrique Iglesias, and John Cicada. As opposed to Georgia's sad, sad distinguished alumni. Pete Carell, chairman of Georgia Pacific Corp. Phil Graham, Pat Mitchell, president of PBS. Hala Modelmog, president of Church's Chicken, and Deborah North.
Well, Deborah kind of saves the whole thing for us. Yes. I didn't realize the president of Church's Chicken is a Georgia alum.
That is great. Why don't we have free chicken at all the tailgates?
I think that should be, they should at least include that in the family-friendly zone.
Yeah, Adam's probably worried it's going to make everybody fat or drunk off chicken.
Well, you know, don't they have a potato cake at Church's?
I'm not familiar with Church's menu.
Sorry. I'm thinking of the Arby's menu, which has the little triangular.
Which you have laminated, right? The Arby's menu?
I do. I do.
They have awesome turnovers.
But, we had that discussion at the beach a couple of while back. Who has the far superior turnover?
Yes, they are far and away the best dessert in a fast food restaurant.
You had the apple pie turnover from McDonald's that day, the apple pies.
Yes, and I regret that.
It was a bad night for you, wasn't it?
It was. It was not good.
That's not good at all.
Were we talking about football?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Well, we were going to talk next. Joe Tereshinsky has a high sprain on his ankle, and for some Georgia fans, that's absolutely wonderful news. For other Georgia fans, that's terrible news. Regardless, Matthew Stafford is the new quarterback for Georgia, and I guess that makes everybody really happy and excited at least to see a kid who was number one quarterback in the country coming in and who throws the ball like a freaking rifle. So, Tim, you like Matt Stafford?
I do. I feel bad for Tereshinsky, though. I thought down the field pretty well at South Carolina, and, you know, I think it's just a really tough luck for him, and, I hope he gets better, but I definitely want Stafford to have that starting job cemented down by Tennessee, just because, I mean, I think that's, he's probably our best chance of winning more, as many games as possible, which I don't know if we're going to make really big waves, I think, this year. But I think he leads us closer to that. So.
Well, and you could look at it in the pocket. And I love Joe T because, I covered him for a couple of years at the paper. And he's just a really good kid. And, I mean, any backup quarterback who's willing to go be a snapper or a, you know, a long snapper or something like that is, I mean, you know, he's got a spirit for the team. But at the same time, you can look at the presence in the pocket and the mechanics, and you just see Stafford sort of is, even though mentally I think Joe T is probably on a different level than Stafford, Stafford is much more developed, I think, athletically, and has some more athletic talent. But
I think it was incredible. I thought was how I thought he was pretty mobile. You know, I mean, he makes fun of himself all the time, and he's reading the, you know, the papers and stuff about how slow he is and everything. But I mean, he moved around pretty quick. I mean, those runs were, he had pretty wide open leads. But I mean, still, he was shiftier than I thought he was.
Yeah, he wears number 7, but he's not really Michael Vick or anything.
No, no, but I mean, he's definitely not the slowest guy I've ever seen in my life.
And he's a lot of man coming at you.
Once he gets going, he's going to be hard to bring down. I think he proved that in the South Carolina game. He broke a couple tackles and made a couple key first down runs.
Well, and what I liked as about that game as well, the folks look at the stat line and they see 3 interceptions, and you know that he still has a long way to go. He was 9 of, I guess, 17, but the first interception, he feels the pressure, rolls out to his left, he escapes it pretty well, then he throws across his body, and he doesn't have enough on the pass, and it gets picked off. It's going to happen 9 out of 10 times. But he recognizes that. In the third quarter, the exact same thing happens. He feels the pressure, rolls out of the way, and then he does a pump fake, and he tucks it down, and he runs and picks up a first down. And, I mean, I think there's going to be a learning curve with him, but I think he definitely has the mental fortitude. Sounds kind of corny, but I mean that's what he's got to get him to he can pick up the system, he can learn, he can read defenses. I mean, the most impressive thing he did to me, I mean, he threw some incredible passes, but when he checked to the run on the touchdown in the goal line, I mean, freshman quarterbacks don't really do that all that often, particularly in their first away game. So
yeah. What do you think of all the people, well, I guess it was a column by, remember who it was now, Bradley or somebody, that said that freshman quarterback guarantees you 1 or 2 losses every year?
Yeah.
Or in their first year. What do you think about that?
Was that in the...
Or maybe it was like Terry Bowden said that, I think, and maybe that in Carter Strickland's column.
Yeah, it was in that. He did a profile of what to expect and what not to expect. See, I say yes and I say no, because Michael Vick was, I mean, he was a redshirt freshman, but it was still his first action. And granted, he was Virginia Tech before they were in the ACC, but they still were unbeaten, and they still went to the national championship game. I guess quarterback's different than running back, because, I mean, Herschel led Georgia to a national title in 1980, but that is a whole different position. But, I mean, I know, because you and I talked about it, and you said that you thought that with him being a freshman, we'd probably stumble once or twice more. But you know, I look at it, and I have an eerie confidence about beating Florida. I think Tennessee is going to be a toss-up game, because, well, I thought that until they lost 2 of their defensive starters.
They're not just starters, stars, you know, or one of them at least.
Yeah, poor Inky just had a really cool name and a horrific injury. I think it like tore blood vessels out of his socket or something. That's not good.
No.
The schedule, I think if you want to start a freshman quarterback in the SEC, Georgia's got a schedule to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, Arkansas, with Mustaine, they're going to have some problems, because they've got to face the West, which is pretty strong this year. They've got to go through Bama and Auburn and LSU. Georgia gets Tennessee, but it's cushioned by UAB and Colorado, and then even Ole Miss and Mississippi State, which... God loves Sylvester Croons, but they're awful. I mean, they are just awful. So, I mean, I think there is an outside chance they can beat Tennessee. They can be unbeaten going to Florida. Whether that happens or not, I don't know.
I was thinking preseason that this was a 9-win season in the regular season. You know, win at least 1 out of 3 among Tennessee, Auburn, and Florida, and then split between South Carolina and Tech. At this point, we've gotten past South Carolina. You know, we should beat Tech.
And because Reggie Ball is still Reggie Ball,
right? And he sucks.
Yeah.
And
God bless him.
You know,
it's
take him.
Sad to see him go.
Taking both of those two games, you know, even if we lost to Auburn and Florida, you know, that's still a 10-win season, even with Stafford. So I don't think he's a guarantee for 2 losses, unless you're going to count the 2 losses that we were planning on taking anyway, or planning on as fans to take anyway.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah. I I think they got a good chance. I think they can. I mean, you look at Florida, Tennessee, Auburn, and Tech, and I see them that they have a very real possibility of going 2-2, and a good chance to go 3-1. I mean, Auburn is pretty good, so I don't feel good about that game for Georgia, but I do think that Georgia can match up with and play with and beat Florida and Tennessee and Tech, and they, I think they should beat Tech because, I mean, just talent-wise, Georgia's leaps and bounds better, and I think they have better coaching right now. So, well, I don't think they have better coaching. I feel fairly confident they have better coaching, with all due respect to Dear Chan Gailey. But
do you think they'll let Reggie Ball run out with our seniors on senior day?
He will
get the last ovation.
It's sort of like when they at the Red Sox, when they hosted the banner, they all cheered Mario Rivera because he blew 3 saves in the ALCS. That sadly hasn't happened since then, but oh well. Now here's the other question: Tereshinski recovers, Stafford goes, he does so-so. He has a game like he has against South Carolina. Do you start Tereshinski if you're Rick for against Tennessee if he's healthy for that game? Because Stafford played well, but he's still showing those freshman tendencies.
I think Paul Westerdahl kind of pointed this out, that with Tereshinski being on the shelf for the next several weeks, that Stafford will get enough reps in practice that he'll almost have as many with the first team as Tereshinski's had. So, you know, I think Stafford will have to play really poorly in order for Tereshinski to come back in and just take over the number one role. He may, you know, get to split some playing time like they were planning on doing before he went down with an injury, but I can't really see him coming in and just automatically taking over that number one role unless Stafford just doesn't have the sort of progression that it seems like he's going to have.
Yeah, I think, too, there's a lot to be said for guys, you know, who've been playing for 3 or 4 weeks, you know, in a row. He's just a lot more fresh, you know, just instead of dragging some guy off the bench who hasn't, you know, got nearly the amount of game time experience or, you know, snaps in practice. And he says that he's, you know, even if he's hurt, he's going to come out there, which I don't know if I want a cold, hurt quarterback, you know, playing against Tennessee. I'd probably just take the inexperienced, but, you know,
at least
game-ready freshman.
Right. Well, I mean, I think if you see Barnes and Joe Cox playing a little more regularly, then you've got some questions about Tereshinski starting, but I just don't see that happening. I mean, I see Stafford settling into a groove. He's got UAB and Colorado ahead of him, and then they go to Ole Miss. So he's got a good chance to definitely play well and to bump his stats up. And again, we talked about in the very beginning of this part of this little conversation that, I mean, Stafford's stats were not really indicative of his performance. I mean, if you watch the game, you thought he had a great game. But if you saw a stat line, you said, God, 9 of 17 and, you know, 3 interceptions. But
that's what, yeah, the best no touchdown, 3 interception game in college football history. I think one of the papers said.
So,
but more importantly, did you know that Colorado played a team called Colorado Mines in 1890?
Really? Now, I would venture to say that the Colorado Mines team is playing has somehow stolen the personalities and identities of the existing Colorado program. And is,
well, that would be patently false because Colorado Mines beat Colorado 103-0.
Wow,
that's stunning.
Yes.
You sure this wasn't last week?
That's what I was going to say. It might be. I have to look up Chad Ron State to see if they played Colorado Mines. But Colorado Mines had a team until like 1920. Who are these guys? This was even a school, or was it just like a bunch of minors who got together and just had a football team?
Did you see the letter in the Banner Herald about a month ago, maybe less than that, about the guy who was the Mercer graduate, and he was proud that Mercer lost to Georgia 50-0 in their first game, or... I can't remember what the... It was somehow saying that Mercer had more pride than Georgia because they lost to him 50-0. But I remember... And, like, he acted like that was the only game. But they played him, like, 30 more times, which...
Okay, yeah. Because in 1892, yes, that Mercer did lose 50-0 to Georgia.
That's random trivia.
January 30th, under head coach Dr. Charles Hurdy.
There's a field named after that poor man. That's somewhere awesome. On North Campus, I can never find it. I think it's a parking lot now.
That was a riveting two-game season. We beat Mercer 50-0 and then lost to Auburn 10-0 in Atlanta, and that was the end of the season.
That's when I think Kyle King's hatred for Auburn began.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right.
We'll have to see if he can verify that for us. But
that's all in the random fact department for right now.
Okay. Well, you keep looking for us. In the random going to jail department, Blake Mitchell was arrested or suspended for allegedly beating up people in a bar in Five Points, in Columbia. Is there a Five Points in every city?
Most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's the one in, there's like two in Atlanta, I think, and there's one in Athens, and like apparently Columbia has one. They also have Hootie and the Blowfish too.
Yes, their claim to fame.
I'm just putting that out there. But so now in what promises to be the greatest name in the history of college football quarterbacks, Smelly is the new quarterback at South Carolina.
Already has been made fun of on PTI today.
Good call. Now is Kornheiser still doing that?
Yeah, they're still doing it. I mean, he does it periodically when he's not
traveling,
yeah.
Doing Monday Night Football goodies left and right. See, that's where we're all heading. Eventually somebody will hear this and think we're geniuses. And
yeah.
Put us in the booth.
It's only a matter of time.
It's been far too long. I could drop out of school. I'm but sure we'll probably like, they'll ask us to do tennis or something. And then
that's not going to be fun.
And we'll just keep talking about college football. Yeah.
If we can have Jimmy Connor in the booth with us, that'd be kind of cool. I mean, he was good, wasn't he?
I don't know.
He's like one of three tennis players I can name for you right
now. I thought that was a triathlete.
I think he was a little more gutsy than great. But
yeah, that's good. I don't know. He was like 40 and playing tennis still or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think that's where he gets his gutsy rep.
So if you're old and you do well?
Yes,
you're gutsy. Of course, 40 is not old. I'm hurtling toward that age, as we all are.
If you perform in your later years, you go from being great to gutsy.
Oh, it's a gutsy performance.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's good. So Smelly's the quarterback now, do you think that's good for South Carolina, or is it just, oh my Lord, we really might go 2-9 this year?
I think this was bound to happen anyway. I think Spurrier was about to make some drastic changes, and you know from his time at Florida that the quarterback is the first one to get the hook. And he has a couple of talented quarterbacks behind Blake Mitchell, and I think this is really convenient for him. So he doesn't have a quarterback controversy. He can just say, you know, Mitchell's out for disciplinary reasons, and Smelly's the new guy. And he looked as good as Blake Mitchell did in the Georgia game, or not the Georgia game, the Mississippi State game. So, you know, I think it's not going to be worse for South Carolina, but this was a 6-7 win team this season anyway. So, you know, I know South Carolina fans typically have higher expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe those have come down a little bit, but the actual results of South Carolina's season is going to be most likely the same.
They might score a touchdown this way.
That's true. That's a step in the right direction at least. You gotta be moving forward. Yeah, I wasn't impressed by Blake Mitchell last year. I mean, not that I was overwhelmed by Savelle Newton, but he was arguably one of their best playmakers, and I felt bad for him. He just didn't fit into Spurrier's system. Because I think he has a moderate to decent arm. He could at least perform well if they had something if they ran, I guess, more of an option read system that kind of Texas ran last year. Of course, now I'm probably sounding really crazy by touting Savelle Newton.
By
mentioning him and Vince Young in the same statement, which
they are pretty much the same. You're right. Sometimes I can't even tell. I was like, God, did Vince Young come back to school? I wonder if this is the first time you think that a guy throws for like an 80-something percentage completion percentage, then gets benched the next game. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, he didn't throw any passes over like 2 yards the entire game. So.
Yeah, that's Smelly, I mean, along with the fact that he's going to just make us happy all year long with his name, he was a parade All-American. I guess he can, I mean, Spurrier arguably was not happy with Mitchell, so I think, I mean, let Blake Mitchell get in all the bar fights he wants, and Steve Spurrier's got his brand new quarterback, so that counts for something, maybe.
Must have been some bar fight. He's suspended indefinitely.
Yeah, it could be a long time. It is really convenient, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I mean, not saying that Steve Spurrier paid anybody to go pick a fight with him. Far be it for me to suggest such wacky conspiracy theories. But I think the suspension, because, you know, I mean, getting in a bar fight is kind of average for a lot of SEC schools. I mean, you always have a random offensive lineman, you know,
yeah,
busting heads somewhere in a bar. But
Or falling asleep while they're on the John.
That's true. Former Cup points all the way around. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. South Carolina is going to be South Carolina. We should all buy that T-shirt which says 18-0. Your season's over. So.
And if there are any South Carolina fans listening, if I go to Columbia one more time and somebody taunts me with Steve Spurrier's record when he was at Florida, then I get to challenge you in a bar fight, and I get to do to you what Blake Mitchell did to whatever he did to that guy.
Because I love the fact that they were piggybacking on the Florida. I mean, yeah, Spurrier at Florida owned Georgia. There's no question about
it. It has nothing to do with what South Carolina.
That's sort of as if my neighbor won the lottery and then gave me $20 and I said, hey, I won the lottery. No, I really didn't. I got $20 from my neighbor who won the lottery. That actually is a horrible analogy. I really couldn't think of one on the spot. But it made sense. You followed it.
I got you, yeah.
Close enough. Served a purpose.
This is what happens when you talk about South Carolina football. I kid, though. My cousin goes to South Carolina. She's a sweet girl, just sadly misled, I think. So,
Jonathan, who were you rooting for in the 1948 Raisin Bowl? Colorado State or Occidental?
Well,
Occidental, I believe. I mean.
They were the Occidental champion, so... bad. It's getting bad. Real bad.
Yeah.
I'd have to say I'd pull for Occidental, though. I mean, Colorado State.
Well, then you and the other 9,000 people who were there would have been very happy. 21-20 Occidental.
Is that the Salad Bowl? Does that say the Salad Bowl right now?
Yes, the Salad Bowl from 1947 to 1951. Probably highlighted by the last Salad Bowl, which was a scorcher. 26-21 Houston over Dayton. A third quarter touchdown run by Shannon for Houston really sealed the deal.
Was Andre Ware playing for Houston at this time? David Klinger, maybe?
Klingler? No, it doesn't say that.
So.
And here's the Seattle Bowl, which Georgia Tech fans, I'm sure, are well acquainted with.
Yeah, if it's on the if it's in the Pacific Northwest or if there's blue grass, that mean.
I think they request that. It's like, what's the farthest away we can go? And that's where we want to head.
Our fans really enjoy being wet and cold during the holidays. How can we make this happen?
And look at this. I have there's a typo right here in the College Football Encyclopedia. It has Georgia playing in the Seattle Bowl.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Against Virginia, which that never happened.
Well, we did play Virginia, but I don't think we played it
in the Oahu Bowl.
Did the Oahu Bowl, that became
Seattle Bowl. Interesting.
Did not know that.
It was Jim Donnan's last game.
So I guess now that my rip on Georgia Tech is completely ruined.
That's okay. Well, no, it's still fun. You know, Georgia played in the Oil Bowl in one of those games.
You would be right. Instead of Georgia Tech, we Georgia beat Tulsa 20-6, and then Georgia Tech beat St. Mary's 41-19.
Is St. Mary's a women's college?
Is Georgia Tech a women's college?
We're crossing lines of decency here, I believe. What we're going to do now is, as much as Tim is rampaging through the ESPN College Encyclopedia, it's a long season, and we definitely do not want to use all of it.
Yeah, right, there's now. Plenty. There's almost 2,000 pages of random facts for us. So.
we should devote a whole segment, a whole episode just to this.
Yes.
We have it's a big football weekend. I believe every day should be Saturday, called it the football apocalypse. Something like that.
Apocalypse?
Football apocalypse? I don't know.
It's really big, good. I think.
It's a big weekend. There are a lot of games. Sadly, the Georgia UAB not really going to rank high on the attention.
We are really getting the shaft. I can't believe nothing on ESPN about it.
I don't know why you want to watch Florida Tennessee over Georgia UAB. I mean, UAB played Oklahoma well.
Yeah, Oklahoma's not good.
Well, the Blazers, for God's sake.
There is that. So we'll do Georgia, Alabama last. We're going to go around and pick who we think we're going to win. We may say why. We may just say, no, I just think they're going to win. So we'll start with a realist for the Florida-Tennessee game.
Tennessee's not as good as everybody thinks they are. Eric Ainge, there's no way he's going to remain as accurate as he has been. And when the big plays don't come against a really, really tough Florida defense, will Tennessee be able to run the ball? Perhaps without Arian Foster. I don't think they've come out and said whether or not he's going to be available. When you lose your defensive tackle, Justin Arrell, and old Inky, I mean, that's just picking up where they left off last year with all the injuries. I think Florida has just too much offense and way, way too much defense. I got to go with the Gators in this one.
Tim Kelly, what do you like?
I like the Gators, too. I think with the loss of the two defenders, I think Tennessee's still flaky, just like last year. So I think Florida, I'm going to say by 10 or 14 points.
Man, oh, man. I disagree with you. I think Tennessee's much better this year, but I think the defenders' loss is going to hurt them. But, so I think Florida's going to win, and they probably win touchdown or less.
That's They're flaky.
Nick Balby. We can go with that opinion, too. LSU-Auburn is the game that, for some reason, is a 3:30 CBS game, and why that isn't the 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock ESPN game, I can't comprehend that, with all due respect to Florida and Tennessee fans. But, I mean, LSU-Auburn is winner of this game, has a legitimate shot at playing for the national championship, or at least having an outside shot at it. So
does the CBS get first pick, though? I thought they did, right?
They get first pick, but they chose Florida-Tennessee as their primetime game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, why? Why, I don't know.
Carry on.
So, go back around, same order. LSU-Auburn, who do you like?
This is such a toss-up. The two teams are, I think, the two best teams in the SEC. LSU, I think, I give the edge talent-wise. Auburn, I give the edge experience-wise. Their offensive line has looked really good. Even when their running game hasn't looked good, Cox has looked good passing the ball. So, you know, I think I have to go with Auburn, even though LSU is might be the best one-loss team in the country at the end of this week.
I'm still going to go with Auburn, just because of the fact that it's at home. And Tuberville is probably going to be like on their own one, like fourth down and 34, and he's going to fake a punt and get it, and they'll probably win on a field goal late in the game.
That's a very specific prediction.
Mark it down, yeah. Okay. Fourth down and 34.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I'm going to say Auburn just because I picked them to win the national championship this year and because they are a ridiculous football team. So I'm going to stick with them. LSU, very good, though. They're a lot better than I thought they'd be. So now we've got Miami-Louisville.
Louisville has just an incredible offense. They dominated Kentucky, which isn't saying much, but still, they dominated Kentucky. And Miami hasn't been able to move the ball. I mean, they only looked so-so against FAMU last week. They were dreadful against Florida State, who's obviously proven not to be, you know, world beaters. Louisville's looking for a huge season this year, so I'm going to go with the Cardinals at home.
All right.
I'm going to stick with Miami, just because they're Miami, and Louisville's Louisville. Is that good enough?
I like that rationale.
And also kind of added by LSU-Auburn, I think Auburn's going to win, also because I'm pretty sure Les Miles never made it past the sixth grade.
That's a very real possibility, too. Miami-Louisville, I don't know, because, and you shouldn't take it into account of so-and-so beat so-and-so, and then so-and-so does this, but Florida State beat Miami, and Florida State is really, I don't want to say not good, because their defense is very good, but their offense has a lot of questions, so I think Louisville is going to be the surprise winner. I'm going to pick Louisville in that contest. Kentucky getting a shout-out from me. So then moving on down the road here, Notre Dame and Michigan. Any thoughts on that you got?
Very bullish on the Wolverines.
You are very bullish on the Wolverines.
Incredibly so. Lamar Woodley is out of this world. He's an entirely different player than he was last year, as is most of the Michigan defense. You can look at the Vanderbilt and Central Michigan scores and you think that Michigan's not all there, but they've been running the ball really well with their trifecta of running backs. And Henny's looked pretty good, but the big difference is that Michigan's defense is leaps and bounds better than they were last year. And Notre Dame has all the skill talent in the world, but they looked shaky when put under pressure. And if Michigan pressures Brady Quinn, I think they have a really, really good chance to win this game.
I like Notre Dame.
Is that because you're Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I think I like it's. I think coaching too. I think Charlie Weiss is a far better coach, and
I would agree with that. I would agree with that Charlie Weiss is the better coach, and that I think he's one of the top three in the country.
And I think they know it's, they're trying to make this a really special season. This is they're in the run. They're in their run of these first three or four games here that they really need to get through. They're going to be super stoked for this one, and I think they're going to come out and.
I was going back and forth on Notre Dame, Michigan. I was thinking the Irish this morning, and then I was thinking Michigan this afternoon. I think the Notre Dame defense is better. I don't think they still have that speed everyone says they actually have. We just don't see they have. But I'm going to say Notre Dame. I was saying Michigan about 30 minutes ago. I'm going to say Notre Dame now. It's at home. I think the Irish are going to trip up along the way, probably next week against Michigan State, but I just think Notre Dame's going to come through on this one. So I have West Virginia, Maryland on here. I don't really know why, because West Virginia is going to destroy Maryland.
Terps, baby.
Sorry, that is the home state right there.
The home state of Tim Kelly.
Is Maryland going to win?
Yes.
Okay.
I have no factual or logical background to prove for that. But yes, they're going to win. Because of the Terps.
Okay.
I think this will be West Virginia's first real test against a defense. They've played two cupcakes up to this point, and we'll see how good Pat White's passing has become against this Maryland defense. But West Virginia's has got to win this game.
I think regardless of the outcome of the game, couches will be burned.
I think you're right about that.
Maryland is notorious, as is West Virginia, if you remember the basketball national championship. Couches ablaze in College Park, Maryland.
Is there something about the the Central Atlantic coast which just necessitates burning couches?
Oh, God, yeah. Mid-Atlantic, so they hate couches.
Were you raised on this?
You got a promotion, my dad would just roll up front, light the couch on fire. It was great, just like, some people just did it every Tuesday, which really kept the couch manufacturers in business.
Well, I mean, I would say there is a
problem. And gasoline manufacturers.
Yeah, there's probably a high couch demand and a couch creation industry in that state.
Yeah, high couch turnover there.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. Let's move away from that real quick to the to a pair of Pac-10 Big 12 matchups. The West Coast just taking on the Heartland, apparently. Oregon, Oklahoma. I'll let the realists go ahead, because that's just an ugly game for me to try to pick right there.
This is an absolute must-win game for the Pac-10. They have tried and tried and tried to have a second team back up USC and to put this conference on the national map. But with Arizona getting blasted by LSU, with Washington State getting beat up on by Auburn, Cal getting blasted by Tennessee, Oregon really needs to make a statement, and just to save some face for the Pac-10 nationally. That being said, Oklahoma is really, really not as good as they were in the spring.
I was going to say 4 weeks ago.
Rhett Bomar, his loss really took out the passing dimension, which, is half of the offense. And Paul Thompson is... He's no Vince Young himself. Adrian Peterson, you can give him 30 carries, but I don't think they'll be able to outscore Oregon with Dixon. And Jonathan Stewart's a really, really underrated running back. He could run for two bills against Oklahoma this week.
I think the Pac-10 doesn't get any respect for a reason. Oklahoma could have one of South Carolina's quarterbacks starting for him. I still think they're going to win.
You see, I'm kind of leaning with you. I mean, I don't have a lot of love for the Pac-10. I think Oregon's a good football team, but if Oklahoma, they play solid defense. Adrian Peterson's going to get 140 yards. That's just what he does. So I think if Oklahoma plays solid defense and slows Oregon's offense down, then Oklahoma wins. The other one is USC Nebraska, I don't want to jump ahead of everybody here in this one, but folks are making this one out to be like it's just this huge, great game, and I just don't see how Nebraska can compete with Southern Cal, particularly in Los Angeles.
USC is a bigger favorite over Nebraska than UGA is over UAB this week. So why isn't the UGA-UAB game on primetime on ABC?
That's an excellent point. Why isn't game day setting up outside Sanford Stadium?
I mean, this is a game riveting matchup.
Pour itself out to Disney.
Pretty much.
USC is, you know, they're USC. They're still solid. They have a ton of depth, a ton of future NFL players. And Nebraska's on the up and up, but, you know, they haven't really proven themselves yet. Hence the 18.5-point spread, but... Bill Callahan, the last time I checked, is still roaming the Nebraska sideline, and for that reason, USC will pound the Huskers this week.
I agree. I like how the promos say resurgence lives here for Nebraska. Who would they be, like Nicholls State or something? You know, it's like, I didn't know that constituted a resurgence. You know, USC is going to roll.
Yeah, I think Southern Cal is going to destroy them. It's a matchup of NFL coaches who were horrible professional ranks, but have managed to put together decent records at their, well, I say decent. Pete Carroll's done incredible things at Southern Cal, but I think the jury's out on Callahan. I think Nebraska's better. I think they're getting players to get into a system, and I think over time they'll be much more competitive than they've been in the past couple of years, but I just think Callahan might do the legwork, and then they'll get rid of him, bring someone else in. But I think for the immediate task at hand, Southern Cal is going to destroy Nebraska. I left off Florida State Clemson, the Bowden Bowl. It's like Bowden Bowl 38 now. So I think Clemson's going to win. I'm going to start out right there because I think Florida State, after beating a mediocre Miami team and then having to rally last week, I don't see Clemson. Despite their stumbles against Boston College, I still think Clemson has more talent and is a better team than Florida State.
They have the skill talent, and I believe they've won the last two in this series. So, you know, Clemson still has the edge as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too. I guess with Kerry up in Greenville, I'm like caught Clemson fever.
I
like Will Proctor. I thought he looked – I mean, I didn't see any of the game, but according to his stats, it looked like he threw pretty well against Boston College, even though they lost. I think that's going to – I mean, that really took a lot of the wind out of their sails, but they know that they're still alive, and if they – you know, by beating Florida State, that puts them right back in the mix. So,
yeah,
for at least the ACC. And, I like Clemson.
And they've got – I mean, and they're sort of in the situation Georgia was 2 years ago with their backfield. I mean, they've got a bunch of young running backs, and they just got to find the right system and the right rotation to get the most out of them. Because I guess it's James White's one of them, and
James Davis
is one of them, and C.J. Spiller. So they've got a lot of talent in the backfield. They just got to make sure that they utilize it properly. But I don't think Clemson's going to roll or anything, but I think they can win by a touchdown, maybe 10 points. And lastly, the game which should be on ESPN Game Day, Georgia UAB. Yeah, I'll let the realists go first here. UAB shocked a lot of people by being competitive against Oklahoma.
UAB, you know, they're notoriously pretty doggone good. UGA, they have a lot to do this week. You know, they have to get Stafford comfortable in the offense and get him checking down into plays and get some of the players that have been out with suspensions back in the mode of hitting people, and they are notoriously bad at these games when it comes to the spread, but I think this is one of the games where UGA will actually cover the spread.
I like that too. I think like the only thing we seem to get national recognition for is for letting these patsies like stay close with us. Not that UAB's patsy, but because I think they are sort of a, you know, sneaky team that always, you know, plays people close. But I think so too. I think you know, I think Stafford's really going to come out and start. I think they're going to let him throw downfield, and they'll let him throw downfield at South Carolina, too. So I think he'll lose more passes, maybe get a touchdown or two, and maybe cut those interceptions down to two.
that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah,
I mean, UAB played well against Oklahoma, but I think that was more of a problem, Oklahoma having to adjust to what it wanted to do on offense and possibly overlooking UAB, and I don't think Georgia's going to do that against them because of UAB's performance against Oklahoma. And, you know, Georgia you know, they haven't, they've got two very impressive wins, but they haven't exactly, you know, blown the doors off anything. So I think Georgia wins. I think, and I'm with you all, I think they cover the spread on it. So those are our picks. I guess that's about it, because we've rambled for about 40 minutes now, and whoever thought that could happen. But when you have the College Football Encyclopedia and Tim Kelly has it in his hands, anything's liable to happen. So,
yeah, Army and Navy finished 1-2 in 1945. In case you were wondering,
you know, we can discuss this next time. But in 1946, Army and Notre Dame finished ahead of Georgia for the national championship, and Georgia was unbeaten and untied. Had Charlie Trippi, who finished number 2 in the Heisman Trophy balloting. And I'd like to make the argument that I think Georgia was a more worthy national champion than either Army and Notre Dame.
You are dead on. And Notre Dame and Army didn't even play in a bowl, according to this the encyclopedia. And we played the Sugar Bowl and beat North Carolina, finished 11-0.
North Carolina had Charlie Choo Choo Justice on that team. And apparently he's in the Hall of Fame, so he's got to be good.
Incredible.
Who needs an encyclopedia when you have Jonathan McGain right
there? I read that in the media guide earlier. I really can't take credit for that, so.
Cheater.
But we have, this is, I guess we'll close it out now, and we have J-Mac and Tim Kelly and the realist here, and we'll try to do another one of these silly contraptions a bit later on. We'll see if I can actually edit this one together, but if you actually took the time to download this and listen to it, God bless you, thank you, and we will talk to you folks later.